So that concludes this week's edition of Gray Matters. We'll be back next Thursday with an hour-long presentation from Alternative Radio. Coming up on CKUT today is Pirate Block Radio. Drama Text will be back on air 2 weeks from now.
The Suwanee Perry Popolo Music Festival is back and online with free jazz, noise, punk, new music, spoken word, electronic, avant-rock, sound art, and dance parties. Over 60 artists performing from Montreal, Chicago, Philadelphia, Sioux Lookout, Toronto, Mexico City, Brussels, Berlin, Tehran, Kampala, and Nairobi. Heed the call between June 3rd and 21st at suwanneeperrypopolo.org.
Toi, ton vaccin, tu l'as eu?
Non, pas encore, mais ça va pas tarder.
Et tu l'as pris pourquoi?
J'ai pris le vaccin danse.
Le vaccin danse? Trop bonne idée.
Ouais, m'entraîner avec les filles, c'est ce qui me manque le plus.
Ben moi, le mien, ça va être le vaccin soccer. Je suis vraiment impatiente de retrouver toute la gang.
La vaccination nous rapproche de tous ces moments. Suivez la séquence de vaccination prévue dans votre région et prenez rendez-vous à québec.ca/vaccin-COVID. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Welcome back, everyone, to this June episode of Pirate Block Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM. With me, Malte Leander, we are coming down to the very last episode for this season. For those of you who are tuning in for the very first time, Pirate Block Radio is a show coming out of Jejage, also known as Montreal, located on unceded Indigenous lands. Departing today is the last of the parts of this first season of 2021, which has been filled with interesting discussions with local artists, makers, creators, and curators on topics like calligraphy, sonic geography, wind therapy, outdoor artistry, transhumanism, audiovisual installation, amongst many other things around digital practices and media art. Revisit all of this and more on our Mixcloud, where you can simply type in Pirate Block Radio to access all previous episodes. A new season is also just around the corner. But enough about that. We are ending on a high note today with interesting discussions ahead of us. First off with Michael Sergil, before chatting with Nicolas Lapointe. Michael Sergil, our first guest, is an artist working in fibers and textile, mostly so in weaving, using the medium as a way to form intersections between identity, Black history, and reflecting on post-colonial theories. So, welcome, Michael Sergil, to the show. A pleasure to have you here today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, I took the freedom here for a short introduction, but perhaps you can, you know, expand a little bit more on your artistic practice.
Yeah, well, you said it well. I work mostly with textile. I weave a lot. And now, actually, I'm trying to keep working with textile, but still having in mind the idea of an installation and the idea of including videos and including sound piece. So I feel like textile has the possibility to be mixed with so many different mediums and still have a really strong message. And as you said, I really like to work with post-colonial studies and to work on the notion of identity and what we define as being an identity, and also with Black communities and plural, because we are diverse, and thinking about how the different communities came in Montreal, came in Canada, Quebec, and how they expand in the country. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. one of your previous works titled "We Wear the Mask" mm-hmm. is a sort of interpretation of Maya Angelou reciting the poem "The Mask," where you are exploring the translation of sound into textiles, just as you mentioned. But I'm interested to hear about how the translation between these two mediums were made, or how are you making those connections between weaving and sound, for example, in this instance?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always felt like when we read a book, we see the lines and the lines are horizontal. And to me, they felt like weaving. They felt like it was threads that were horizontal. And for sound, I was always thinking about the fact that sound, when we talk, when we recite a poem, it's still text. It's still the same idea of reading something, of something horizontal, of something with rhythm. And I was thinking, maybe trying to figure it out how I could be able to still work with this text, but this text that is now oral, to be able to weave it. And I've worked with two friends that are in electroacoustic. So they told me a little bit some things. They explained how a sonogram work, and I really just enjoyed working with different programs and seeing how I can make the sonogram a bit bigger, seeing more the details of the waves of the sound. And then I really just played with it, and at some point I felt like it looked really like one of my weavings, and I just put it vertically because a sonogram is always horizontal. And when I put it vertically, I could see like all the lines, all the waves that were like threads, basically. So I followed those threads for me and I weave them. So that's how I really played with this. And also in the poem, Maya Angelou take a time where, well, she recites the poem, but sometimes she could just stop talking and looking at the public and not seeing anything and smiling or crying. And to me, this wasn't necessarily silence. And everyone in music, everyone that studied in music knows that when there is no sound, there's still sound. When someone is not talking, there's still sound. And silence is not silence. And even in the idea of postcolonial studies, or when you're talking about injustice, you know that when someone is silent, it doesn't mean that the person is silent because they don't want to talk. It can mean way more things that we think. And to me, having this piece where we can see that it's not necessarily silent, but you see that the waves are not necessarily there, or it's really small, or just to have this person that I could just create like a empty space in the weaving, but still have like the threads that are holding everything together. So to me, it was a beautiful way to also put up front that when we are silent, and when I say we, I talk about Black people in general, but when we are silent, it doesn't mean that we're silent. It means something else. It can mean way more than we think it means. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really interesting way of using quote unquote silence mm-hmm. in this medium where it means a lot in sound as well, as you're saying, but how that translates into your weaving as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this approach of creating a sort of codification system seems to be something that is an approach that you're doing in some of the other works too, of creating intersections between the topics that you're exploring and commenting on and the way that you express them in fiber and textiles. Can you elaborate a little bit more about this relationship or about codification systems and how you use them in general, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, my code kind of changed during the years. And the first code that I created was with Black Skin, White Mask. Peau Noire, Masque Blanc is the translation of the book. And it was really to think about the fact that when we talk about Black people or white people, and when we talk about color, we're never black or white. We're always like shades of brown and shades of beige. And for me to have the vertical threads that are really the threads that are holding the whole fabric, having them being shades of brown and beige, it was also a way to have a contre-discours, like to think about the fact that we use words that are not real. We use words that black and white that are not real, actually. And it's something that I think can add a difference and a distance between people. But even though it's something that I criticize, it's something that I don't know how I could, what words we could use to describe different communities. And it's just a thing that I was thinking about when I was doing this code, and to be able to at least put it up front and to show people that all the horizontal threads are black and white, because these are the words that we use to describe ourselves, but all the threads are vertical, that creates this intersection, like a contre-discours from all those things that we assume that are the language that we use. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a powerful tool, and again, an interesting way of reflecting complex topics of discussion into the medium that you're working in, that I find interesting and beautiful too. I also read that you define your practice as working with composition through decomposition. Could you elaborate a bit on what that means and how that takes form in your practice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess for me, saying composition through decomposition is the fact that when you use, for example, a book, because the first code that I did was with a book, and well, it's always with books actually, and it's always to read the book multiple times and then create the code, and to create the code, I still have to read the book another time, and after that, to weave the book. So it's to basically knowing the book by heart almost, and decompose it to be able to recompose it in the space, and not having it being, it's still palpable, it's still something that you can hold when you have a book in your hand, but having all the notions, having all the like the length of the book, having it being in the space and being an installation, then you can see like the length of the words, the length of the sentences. And I felt like it was a way to like decompose, to read through something, to decompose it and then to recompose it into space. I don't know if that makes sense. Sometimes I translate in my head, and like French English, so I hope everything is clear.
No, I can see how the process of translation or converting from one medium, from the book to another, and still maintaining the content or message in a way, in a new form.
Exactly.
So apart from addressing these topics of Black history and identity through your own artwork, you're also active with the organization Nigra Juventa, working for the well-being and health of Black communities in Montreal. Would you talk a little bit about what kind of work that is that you're doing there?
Yeah, well, at Nigra Juventa, we really worked in the art field, but the art field still composed of many different layers, and we create exhibitions and projections, viewings, and also discussions, panel of discussions, and we invite many artists that are either well-known or really emerging artists together to have a dialogue with the two entities, and to be able to have exhibitions that can have like really many layers, but also the possibility to have a dialogue between young artists and well-known artists together. Yeah.
So apart from all of these projects and your own, or your art making, could you give us some insight into what you're interested about lately, or what you're currently diving deep into perhaps?
I'm really interested in thinking about the migration of the different Black communities in Montreal. And I specifically say Montreal because I think there's a lot of work that has been done in the rest of Canada. But in Quebec, in Montreal, there was always a lack of archives, a lack of information that I feel needed to be filled. And I know that there's some people working right now on that, and I'm really happy about that. But I feel like as an artist, it's also important to create work that talks about this migration, that talks about this history, because it's important to also have this as being something archived, but also as being something that is part of our patrimoine, that is part of our history, and that can be somewhere held, somewhere that can be preserved. And I feel like there's so many things that still needs to be said. And I discover so many books and so many researcher, historian, and I feel like it's a work that is hard to do because you always feel like, okay, I have to look at all these books and where to find them and who is this person. And I don't know, I feel like it's something that should be accessible. It's something that should be everywhere in every universities and every libraries. I don't know. I talk a lot about that. And I feel like it's there's a lack somewhere. And even in the Francophone, Anglophone communities, I feel like there's so many people working on that in the Anglophone communities. But I feel like there's a lack also in the Francophone communities where there's sometimes information that we can find, but they're all in English. And sometimes Francophone don't necessarily read English. I'm happy that I'm at Concordia right now, so I'm quite fluent in English and I understand English quite well, but it's not necessarily the case for everyone. And to not have this information in French and English, to not have it, like not thinking, having all this information bilingual, it's something that to me add another layer of difficulty to be able to understand completely our history and having to do this work again and again and again, because I'm pretty sure that I'm not the first one interested in this history. But where is this history? Where are all the people that were doing the same research that I'm doing right now, and where this research is? And I feel like if we don't have this possibility to have artists, curators, historian that has this piece somewhere held somewhere, that it's clear that we have access to it, then we will always be the same. We'll always do the same work again and again and again.
Right. A frustration task and definitely a lack of, a lack of archiving or perhaps a systemical structure of some kind. So yeah, definitely a frustration and a repetitive kind of work that could be avoided.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Well, I wish you luck in that journey, and I hope that work will go smoothly, even when frustrating at times.
Yeah, no, but I'm still happy to do it because I got the chance to meet some historian that I was so happy. Like it's something that it's just so exciting when you read something and that you're so inspired by it, and you have the chance to meet the person who actually did the research, who actually wrote the book. So I'm happy to, at least doing this research led me to meet some people that I'm just honored to be with, talking with. So at least this is happening. And I really, really do hope that with the work that I'm doing and the work that all the people that I know are doing right now will be somewhere that it will be accessible at some point.
That's great. Well, I wish you the best of luck in your future work, Mikael, and thank you again for coming on and speaking with me.
Thank you for inviting me and the conversation.
Take care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
So that was the Finnish experimental electronic duo Pansonic with their track Koilinen. With that, we are going into our discussion with the second guest of the day, Nicolas Lapointe. A multidisciplinary creator with a tendency for electronics and technologies in inventive ways and contexts through sculptural pieces and installation work, amongst other things. Thanks a lot, Nicolas, for speaking to me today.
Thank you so much, Malte. I'm really happy to be here. I'm a big fan of the show, and it's just my pleasure to talk about my own work.
Happy to have you here. So let's get into it. A running theme within your practice and artistic work are electronics, as I just mentioned. And you're hosting workshops around this theme every once in a while, many of them at Eastern Bloc here in Montreal, and around these topics to make these tools available to a bigger amount of creators and people. Could you talk a little bit about what these are about or what it is you're teaching in these workshops?
Sure. Well, maybe I'll start with how I learned myself these tools. Like a lot of us, I learned sort of the basics in high school, but it's sort of, you know, it's hard to sort of cling on to it or begin an interest in it. It's more during my university years studying art that I stumbled upon this. I had a teacher and an artist, Daniel Jolliffe, who sort of introduced me and the class itself to electronics. And he himself was a big fervent of everything that is open source and sharing information. So my own experience from the get-go with electronics comes from the community itself and this idea of sharing the knowledge, especially about electronics, coding, things like that. So from the start, it was very important for me. So everything that I learned to also make sure that if I gather my own knowledge later and with also some experience of making artworks that use these electronics devices, to be able to then share to other people what I've learned, similarly to how I myself have learned.
So the content of the workshops themselves, is that electronics from the very basics, or what kind of themes or topics are you exploring within the content itself?
So the first workshop that I offered, Demystifying Electronic Art, that workshop, basically the objective was really to give the participants a basics in the not only the language electronics, but also being able to understand, read, and recreate circuitry at a very sort of basic level, but really to give them tools to therefore afterwards actually start experimenting in their own artwork. There's a lot of focus in the workshop about the sort of the mystification and the demystification part. At the same time, we talk about the history of electronics or technology itself, its relationship with mysticism, and also art, how artists have utilized these tools and made the best out of it. It's always been sort of there for artists as toolkits, just like paints or clay for modeling. Technology has always been sort of like a preferred media for artists.
Yeah, I definitely feel the sort of category of itself, though, as a toolkit, the electronics often being daunting or sort of not a forbidden territory, but definitely a bit scary stepping into or dipping your toes into for the first time. So I'm guessing that the term demystifying is sort of working against that, perhaps.
Exactly. I think it's very much to show that everyone can sort of do it, and I'm here and we're here to discuss about these the sort of the fact that it's presented as being very complicated or obtuse or even magical, mystical. Often we associate electronics with sort of magic, wizardry. We're often sort of this aspect of understanding electronics is often hidden, for example, in smartphones or laptops. We don't really have access to this or to the knowledge of this, how it's shared. It's all hidden behind sort of this beautiful aesthetic components. So this is part of it. It's basically going into it and saying to the participants, this will be, we're not going to explore any sort of like math or physics. We're really going to go in a more simpler approach in order to understand it. And just having this sort of this basic sort of introduction to it, you can then just sort of understand what's going around you. The tools that you use every day, just like the screen and the recorder, just have an understanding of how exactly these things work so that you can afterwards make the best out of it.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it goes a bit hand in hand also with the movement around DIY, which is certainly something that I have taken to in my artistic practice or my beliefs around how to create, being perhaps the most sustainable approach, both socially building from a grassroots level with the closest circle or community that you have available, but also perhaps in terms of equipment and tools, getting by with what you have and reuse and repurpose what you can. How would this look in terms of what you're doing?
I think what I hope to offer is, as you mentioned, the DIY world is also something that is linked with sustainability and also sort of going against the corporate sort of grain. So I hope that not only do I provide sort of like an exciting sort of situation for the participants to learn about electronics and how to include that in art, but also a way to even sort of look at sort of what's around them, to maybe try to, instead of throwing a piece of electronics away, how to potentially repair it. Often it seems so sort of complicated, but it's not necessarily that complicated. Just a basic understanding of it, you can then understand if yes or no this object is actually broken, or if you could maybe easily fix it with soldering iron. So I think it just goes into many different parts, which are then also related to the DIY movement and to that artistic practice that utilizes that. Just if you have a practice that and you use a lot of these DIY tools, it has a sort of concept of sharing automatically. There's also a language associated with the DIY movement, the sort of the machines that cut the tools. So it enters all these sort of like the aesthetics of the art piece, and then it goes directly into a conceptual sort of sustainable sharing sort of aspect of it.
So more about the teaching and learning scenario, perhaps.
So if we'd switch the roles, I'm interested to hear of when you find yourself at the role of learning, perhaps, like at what times do you feel like you learn the most, perhaps, or absorb knowledge, and what context or in what position would that be?
Well, I think this is, it's very much, my answer will be very much just for me. I think this is very much different for everyone. And I try to take that into account whenever I'm either teaching a class or a workshop, to provide different sort of formats of learning and teaching. But for me, what really, really works and what gets me into spending the most time learning something is to just get excited by it. Just to really have like a push, a drive to learn it. Sometimes it's for a specific project. Sometimes it's just by curiosity itself. But that's the main thing that will sort of push me to do things. So when I was learning electronics, the enchantment and also the possibilities that were offered for my sculpture artistic career were just absolutely incredible for me. So I decided that that's what really, really pushed me to sort of take the time to go online and read sort of tutorials, read a little bit more about electronics coding. That's also something I try to do in my workshops and classes to sort of excite the students and participants, share the sort of love for what I'm doing or teaching.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back with more conversation after this short musical pause. Here's Brown Rice from American jazz trumpeter Don Cherry's album with the same name.
Take it there with no sorrow. Oh my.
Welcome back to Pirate Block Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM with our last episode of this season. I am sitting and talking to Nicolas Lapointe, and we've just touched upon some topics of his approach to electronics and the DIY side of things. And now I figured that we could move into talking some about your own artistic practice and creative projects. I mean, some of the things that we've just discussed around your approach to electronics certainly blend into your approach to art making, and the two perhaps feeding off of each other as well. I understand it from some of your past works that this side of electronics and artificial often meet with what could be said to be the opposite, perhaps the natural and the organic. Could you speak a little bit about this connection or relationship in your work?
Well, we don't often associate the natural and electronics together, but they're not that far apart. And it's something that they also, they blend very well together. There is an obvious sort of contrast of organic and inorganic, or industrial and sort of natural. But I mean, all of these things have often been combined to then create often these sort of mystical concepts around, for example, electricity. When electricity in the late 18th and 19th century was sort of discovered, but also sort of experimented on, immediately there was a boost in everything that is sort of spiritual but phantasmal, or the idea of corpses that are sort of something that we cannot see. Just like electricity is a force of nature that we cannot necessarily see, that potentially then once we have the knowledge of this, we can apply this to maybe potentially there's people or there's souls that are sort of there but we cannot see. So it's something that I try to do again with the tools that we have now, the tools that I sort of grew up with, the tools that are all around us, and to try to do these sort of associations again to potentially sort of recreate or find new sort of links that can be created out of that. Hopefully mystical, but sometimes sort of demystifying the machine itself, creating new links, creating new relationships. So that's something that is, it's sort of like a tool that I enjoy using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting way of underlining connections that might not be the most obvious ones when just putting the terms next to one another. I also understand that a lot of the artistic work that you're doing is collaborative, together with your partner and spouse, Anna Eiler, having done work all around Montreal at Fonderie Darling, Ada X, and others. How is it working so intimately close in a creative collaborative situation?
Well, we started collaborating when we met each other at university studying visual arts. So while we were in the process of learning and experimenting with new tools and new techniques, we met each other, and from almost the get-go, we decided to pool our energy and our know-hows together to create art. It was a way for us as new emerging artists to get the best out of sort of, you know, attempting to show the works at galleries or even at doing calls for submissions. It felt like we were stronger together. And so we started that way. And at first, we sort of would do both our own side of the thing, whatever we were comfortable with. But more and more, we decided to not just do what we were comfortable with or both for our own side, but even learn sort of new things. And from there, our collaboration sort of evolved and became more and more sort of intertwined. Even if we sort of kept our own sort of individual practice, a lot of this is, you know, influence from one or another. There's a lot of like even our own works that have been highly influenced from each other. So last year, we decided to combine sort of both of our works and just become one to sort of apply for things. It would just be a little bit easier. So some of the works, we kept all the works that are sort of our own with our own names, but everything else we sort of combine into our new collaborative practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting how a longer amount of time of individual collaborative work can result in a merging of two practices like that. It's an interesting entity to me.
It felt sort of natural.
I imagine that going down the line, working in that way.
I mean, we live with each other, we discuss art together, we see art together. We also are influenced by, we have similar surroundings, we consume the same culture. So in that way, it was natural for us to sort of explore the possibilities, to really push that forward.
Mm-hmm. But apart from work in Montreal, you have done a handful of residencies in the past too. One resulting in the work La Fable d'Oxa 21965 interested me particularly, an artwork stemming from a residency taking place in Girona in Catalonia. And here you were exploring geology, scanning the environments of the area. So again, the natural and technology meeting in a sort of cycle feeding back into itself. Could you talk a bit more upon this project?
This residency was done in collaboration with the Artist Run Center in Quebec, La Chambre Blanche, and an artist run center sort of gallery in Catalonia called Bolet. And so they sort of offered participants to sort of apply for this, and we had the great opportunity to go there and to do a work that we, with tools that we just sort of had learned, we had taken our own sort of workshop the previous year with a good friend of ours around 3D scanning. So we decided to, or photogrammetry, and we decided to apply to a residency and to do a project around sort of geology, but also construction, and sort of merge all these things together. It was a way for us to be able to do a work that didn't necessarily consist of a lot of physical things. We didn't need a lot of tools, a lot of like a workshop per se. We could go there with our own cameras and our computers. It was very versatile for that particular residency to go there, and it allowed us to visit a lot of Catalonia. We wanted to explore. That part of Europe is such a huge and long history in humanity. We decided to sort of visit these caves and been inhabited, and to scan them in 3D, and then to compose sort of a large, almost like a timeline, but it's cyclical. It's a loop. While we were there in Catalonia, we were in a small town called Girona. It was absolutely infested with tourists. We really felt it not just by seeing the tourists, but a lot of the locals had a lot of signs over about protesting against sort of tourism, but also protesting against things like Airbnbs, because the city became this very sort of expensive town and the locals just couldn't live there anymore. Especially a couple years back where they went and filmed, Game of Thrones, and that just sort of, it exploded. So we felt that, and we decided to have an impact, like to put that into the piece itself. So we added a lot of things, not just of the history, but also parts that were sort of this sort of fake touristy sort of world within that. And we also decided to include ourselves, to 3D scan ourselves as if we were sort of like these entities, alien entities, sort of scanning, going around, sort of not necessarily wreckage, but these sort of these ruins around there. We felt we didn't feel comfortable to sort of be part of it. We felt like observers in sort of the situation. So this sort of work it sort of represents that.
Yeah, I mean, the position of being a tourist can feel just like that, being an alien in an otherwise natural environment, and not being part of it in the same way as local population, obviously. For you listeners out there, if you're curious to read more about this work and others from Nicolas Lapointe and Anna Eiler, you can head on over to their mutual website, aenl.net, where you will find the whole catalog of other works. So another approach that seems to be a running theme in some of your projects is mysticism, not only in your workshops, demystifying electronics whilst teaching, but the mysticism in more complex topics and questions, among those authenticity in the digital age. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
It's a complicated question because it's something I'm still exploring, and every sort of piece is a way for me to sort of explore that. And I don't necessarily have an answer or a fixed position on it. And that in itself for me is important. And so a lot of the works, there's a fine line where I don't want to necessarily show that, this mysticism is something that is charlatanism, or to make fun of it, or to just at the same time say that it's real and we should pay more attention to it. I think it's more an exploration of these two lines. I try to, at the best of possible, balance between this, because I think both, any sort of extreme would just sort of render the artwork a little bit boring, a little bit one-sided. I think there's a very interesting line that we could, as a society, saddle and enjoy both sides of the coins. But unfortunately, we tend to view just one thing as, either black or white. So that's why I say it's a bit hard to sort of answer this question. It's something that I'm very, very interested in, and I want to explore this through my artwork and through the works that we do as a collaboration with Anna Eiler. But there's no definite answer to it. It's something that we're both interested in, but we have, unfortunately, we don't have the answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems
it's a research.
It does seem like a sort of ideology, perhaps, that is an ever-changing question and answer to perhaps too, that will probably be altered. Depending on project and standpoint, that could continue to change throughout a lifetime.
Exactly. I mean, just technology and sort of mysticism, but even religion itself has had a sort of an interesting relationship with each other. From the beginnings of writing that we've sort of recorded text, there's myths about that link sort of technology with deities. Whether Hephaestus sort of representing iron ore forging or technology, there's always been sort of this link. And I think nowadays, even with the new tools, there's such interesting connections being done, like Second Life Buddhist temples, where people can go virtually log on into Second Life sort of world, which, for those who don't really know, Second Life is a bit like a online sort of like a platform where someone can be a virtual avatar and do all sort of things that they want to do. So there is a lot of Buddhist temples in Tibet were some of the first ones to create websites to advertise what they were doing, but also to show sort of like their own knowledge, share this sort of things. So there is something interesting and to be explored with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Going back perhaps just a little bit, focusing on the duo of you and Anna working together, I'm curious to hear how the creative process looked for you when being two people and when working with so many different mediums and tools. Does one of you pitch an idea that then sticks and that you run with, or how does that look like?
It's there's no easy answer to this one either. It's something that comes, often it'll start with one of us working on something specific, whether it's we're learning a new tool or we're just experimenting with something, and the other one really sort of likes it, and then all of a sudden we have a discussion on it and it sort of blooms from that. Sometimes it's one of us who has sort of like maybe a certain structure, and then we both get excited to, we discuss about it, we both get excited to it, and then we launch from that. So it sort of really depends. But there is some, like, initially there needs to be some sort of like a catalyst. And then for us to sort of we both need to be interested in the project. Often maybe one of us will sort of be interested in something, and if the other one doesn't really interested, well, we'll maybe just continue maybe more personally on it. But when we really start something big or something where we're both very much involved in it, it's something that while discussing the sort of the early stages of it or just the concept of it, the other person gets really, really excited and either all of a sudden, you know, brings up new ideas or really, really wants to be a part of it.
Yeah, it sounds like, again, an interesting way of collaborating once you're sharing that much of your everyday life, not only meeting up in the studio to co-create, but also co-live and grow in other layers of life itself outside of creating.
Creation is a complex thing. It takes time. It takes a lot of discussion. So there's no sort of lightning bolt that hits one of us and then we have this sort of specific idea of what we're doing. It's a lot of spending time with notebooks, sort of discussing each other's ideas, doing sketches. There's a lot of sketches. Sometimes we'll sketch out things sort of in our notebook, but sometimes we'll do 3D models. So there's a lot of experimentation, and often sort of the idea that maybe one of us had at the start is very, very much different at the end because of this process of sharing and evolving and working together.
Yeah, going through two chains of ideas parallel. I imagine that to be the case, that where you're throwing in there is not the same thing that comes out on the other end.
No, but you have to be ready for that as well. Mm-hmm. So that when having an idea, it has to be sort of ready to be molded into maybe something different or changed.
Absolutely. I'm curious to hear if there are some new themes or topics that have caught your interest as of lately, or perhaps things on the top of your list that you wish to dive into moving forward.
Well, recently, with obviously a lot of us with the recent pandemic, we've had to explore new outlets. And one of these sort of outlets that we were interested in, we were doing a little bit before, but hiring people, was making websites, sort of artworks with websites. And now it's something we've delved into a lot more, and we're sort of working a lot more to sort of do. Throughout our artistic process, there's so many things that we've learned. We used to make these sort of ginormous sculptures, and we found out that it was such a hassle to move them, to present them. There's always the chance of something breaking, and then what happens with sort of the insurances, having the gallery involved and all that. It became sort of a stress, and I think this, there's the physical costs of things, the ecological costs of these physical materials, not that it's not present online, but it allows for sort of a different approach and a malleability to be able to apply also anywhere in the world and be able to show your work anywhere in the world. So that's something we've really sort of dived into. I'm really slow. I'm really not great at coding. Anna is the sort of the coder extraordinaire. I'm still a little bit more in the physical world, but I'm getting there. I'm trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the great way of being able to complement each other's strengths and weaknesses. Well, Nicolas, I think that's all we have time for today, unfortunately, closing off this winter-spring season of Pirate Block Radio, but certainly doing so on a high note. So thanks again for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure. A lot of fun. And have a good one.
Thanks. Well, same to you. Well, you listeners don't have to wait for that long until the next season. We are returning again in August and all throughout the fall, same place, same time, here at CKUT 90.3 FM, every first Thursday of the month between 8 and 9 p.m. with me, your host, Malte Leander. If you can't bear the thought of waiting that long, you can get over to our Mixcloud, type in Pirate Block Radio, and you'll stumble upon the archives of 40-something episodes of past seasons. We'll leave you today with the grimy track Meditation by Baby Father, produced by Dean Blunt and Arca. See you all soon again. Take care. 20 bands, 20 bands, 20 bands.
Merci beaucoup, Mme Saint-Onge. J'aurais fait l'intro de Francis et les exerciceurs sur les ondes de CKUT Radio McGill. Cette émission fait hommage à Guédalia Tarzatès.
On se plaît et on se belle et on se congratule et on se mercaboule tandis que le rouleau continue son béant et que nous continuons tombons, tombons. Et c'est le haricot qui dans le cachot sont les hirondelles. Et tous les margaris dans les margaris de l'art des baleines. Je t'aimerai toujours, mon amour, je t'aime.